I am Plata on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Rethink Work, Finding and Keeping the Right Talent is the new book from Eric Tremonde. It looks at one of the big problems that employers are facing, whether in big, medium, or small businesses, and that's the retention of younger workers. Turnover is notoriously high, and in this new book, Mr. Tremonde outlines how to find the best employees and how to humanize the workplace and bring back an idea of community. I'll get him to tell us more about this book. He is the founder of Driver, a company leading the charge in intergenerational management. You can watch his TED Talk. He lives in Vancouver and is a sought-after speaker represented by the National Speakers Bureau. The Twitter handle is @Tremonde. The book is published by Barlow Books. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Eric Tremonde. Mr. Tremonde, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Joe. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thanks for joining us. So just how dire is it for employers nowadays in terms of retaining workers, and especially the cohort of workers that's say, your age, mm-hmm. millennials?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we look at recruiting and training costs being quite high. I mean, there have been organizations that I've spoken to where to train and recruit someone, and specifically in the engineering field, we're looking at upwards of $250,000, and it takes not only weeks, months, but sometimes years for people to gain their full potential in the position. So when we fail to really bring on the right people for the right reasons, what happens is we see the tenure shrinks, and the longevity, the continuity, and the overall development of the company struggles as a result.
The great thing that your book does, Eric, is talks about the sort of culture that emerges when you have a workforce that has people that are older, people that are middle-aged, people that are millennials.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about that in just a sec. But,
sure.
but just in terms of how millennials are perceived, mm-hmm. Because I think this is something that you talk about in the book, and
yeah.
it's just, you know, it's so easy to shit on millennials, you know, or whatever we call that age group,
mm-hmm.
you know, the sort of entry-level age group. Post high school, post college, you know, they're lazy, they're entitled. I mean, what do you say in the book about how they're perceived?
Well, I mean, that's just it. When we generalize people, whether it's boomers, traditionalists, millennials, or otherwise, we typically tend to default to negative traits that we see in more people than not. If I were to speak to a millennial, similar to what you said, you know, I often hear that they're this narcissistic, not loyal, job-hopping generation
mm-hmm.
that lives in their parents' basement, watches Netflix all day, and plays Xbox at night. Now, I mean, it's really difficult to generalize or stereotype any group of people, let alone the millennial group in Canada, which, you know, contributes to 21% of the population, 7.5 million people, and ultimately doesn't want, need, value, or expect the same thing, regardless of what the generalizations are.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to generalize boomers, for example, as not as tech-savvy or other pejorative.
So. I'll let you do the generalizing.
Yeah.
I don't want to get any trouble. Yeah.
Do you find that millennials know what they want?
Well, I mean, you look at anyone coming out of school from any generation, there's always that discovery process. There's always that learning and figuring out not only who we are, but what the best fit is for us. And I say us very loosely. The thing is that if we can understand who we are as individuals, ultimately what it means for us to be successful as individuals, and then understand what sort of values, experiences, and opportunities are present in the job, then I think we can find that fit a little bit faster. Now, what I go into detail in the book about is talking about sort of a futuristic job description. If we were to look at a job description today, it doesn't really describe the job at all. It really is just an experiences, skills, and requirements checklist. Do you have this education? Do you have these skills? And do you have these requirements? Now, for at no time at all am I trying to discount the importance of these things,
yeah.
but they're not differentiators, right? So if you were to look at an accounting firm or accounting firms, I'll say that plural, you could look at the big four, you could look at government, you could look at the golf course down the street, you could look at the coffee shop, or anywhere in between. And if you were to look at these job descriptions, they'd be largely the same, right?
Yeah.
You're an accountant. You have to do what an accountant does. But the culture, the values, the experiences in these places differ so significantly, and we're not seeing that in how we articulate the stories and the people today. And again, this isn't a millennial conversation. This is an accessibility of information conversation that needs to be had if we're to keep people for the right reasons.
So employers need to think about that and whatever culture they're fostering
mm-hmm.
in their workplace or cultivating in their company.
Mm-hmm.
But do you find employees, workers are thinking about that as well? I mean, I guess they're just really when they're applying for something,
mm-hmm.
they do the interviews,
mm-hmm.
that's all they're thinking about, landing the job, not thinking about, well, who am I going to work with?
Yeah. Well, there's one thing I'll say to start, is that for employers, by no means am I advocating for catering to or accommodating to a next generation.
Right.
Not in the slightest. But what I am saying is that if we were able to articulate some of these stories, and I'm working with an organization called True Calling Now who does this beautifully through video content, but if we were able to articulate the values and the experiences of these jobs, then what happens is you start to answer questions that people didn't know they had. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you graduate out of school, whether it's high school or any sort of post-secondary, and you say, look, okay, I've got these skills, or I've got the ability to acquire these skills if this employer were to bring me on. Now, another one of the things that I go into the book about is that perhaps it's not what we do that's so important, but why, who, and how we do our work that really is the differentiator. Let's just take a standard white-collar job right now. I'll use myself. Whether I haven't worn a white collar since I've been in the position, but as a consultant, typically my day will be 30% of it on the phone, 30% of it in the meeting, 30% of the day I'm hammering on the keys. But if you were to look at numerous professions in this sort of corporate space, we're all doing the same thing. Where we differ is what the feeling that we get from our work, why we're doing the work that we're doing, how we go about doing the work that we're doing in terms of teams, individual, flexibly, remote, how our performance management is maintained, what the feedback looks like, and ultimately who we're doing it with in terms of how these people go about doing their work. So if we can articulate that a little bit further, then I think it starts to answer these questions that people didn't know they had about what work environment would be most conducive to being productive and happy.
And so you recommend for the applicant, To ask as many questions, well, not as many questions, but ask some questions, because I guess we don't do that enough, do we, when we're applying for stuff?
One of the best tips that I give people who are looking for the next job is, of course you're going to go through the standard hoop jumping that everyone else does, but one of the best things that I think you can do is actually have a 30-minute, 60-minute coffee or a conversation with somebody who's already in the position that you're applying for.
Mm.
Because not only do you get to find out what the job is like, but you get to find out what life they're able to live, too. I mean, we're living in a day and age now where work is something we do more than anything else in the day. It's not transactional. It's not 9-to-5 like it used to. It really is a huge identifier of who we are. And so if we can understand who we're going to be working with and what life they were able to live as a result of the job, then I think we can start to see what's going to be a better fit for us.
So you mentioned the work that you do as a consultant. What do businesses tell you in terms of what they're looking for, and do you find that they're not attuned to, say, addressing the problems that they're facing? I mean, did you find that they're doing a lot of stuff that they shouldn't be doing, say?
It's hard to generalize. If I were to generalize, though, I would say that the root of every problem comes down to communication.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's just talk about, basic human needs or wants, I'll say. As an individual, I appreciate respect, acknowledgement. I appreciate appreciation,
mm-hmm.
And I appreciate the ability to build relationships in the workplace that I'm in. Now, if we were to look at how work has evolved and how technology has been integrated into the workplace that we're living in, we'll see that now it's not so much about going up and across the office to talk to somebody. It's about using that intranet. It's about typing, clicking, swiping, tapping, and just looking at a short, terse, text-based conversation that has no emotion or substance to it. And as a result, I think we're feeling more disconnected from our peers, from our superiors, from our juniors, because what we're trying to do, generally speaking, is be more quick, more efficient, more productive than ever before. And while we may get more done, I think the feeling of connectivity, of community, of a sense of belonging is being compromised as a result.
Now, the I guess the appreciation that we all seek, the approbation we seek from employers, does that differ, say, from previous generations? I mean, you talk to older people, they didn't expect that from whoever they worked for.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something, say, unique to millennials?
I wouldn't say it's unique necessarily to millennials. I would say it's more and more common. And the reason for that, I mean, a lot of people call that being entitled.
Oh, yeah.
I call it being aware and expectant. I mean, to have more awareness of opportunities and jobs and positions and places to live and places to see and go now just due to the internet, call it social media, call it mainstream media, call it whatever you want, that to fight for good talent now, leadership certainly has changed because we have at least more perceived choices. I mean, we heard of Sweden going to a six-hour workday. Now, I mean, if you like your job, I would suggest you'd want to do it for more than 6 hours a day anyways. Yeah. But if you're looking for a certain experience and looking for a certain way of being communicated with and appreciated, there's no right answer. I'm not saying there's a universal best culture, but I think as individuals, we need to seek out what opportunities ultimately allow us to be our most productive selves.
Does your work, Eric, allow you to talk to employers and employees about, say, the work-life balance? Because that's a thing that a lot of people are thinking about. I mean, you pick up the newspaper, magazines and the sort, or watch television. Everyone is concerned about that.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, I think you raise a great point. I think we're kind of past the time of work-life balance to the point now we're more looking at work-life integration. And if we can integrate work and life, then I think we can be better off. Now, with that being said, organizations now still, and I would say probably more increasingly so moving forward, are going to more enforce the only work from 9 to 5, where at 5 o'clock, I mean, I've heard companies in France or even the country are looking to shut off company communications, like close the server down or close the connection at 5 o'clock so that people can go and live their lives outside of work. And, you know, for some people, that's an absolute blessing, you know, and others want to take their work home with them. And what I'm advocating for in the book, Rethink Work, is that there isn't a right answer. It's just about being proud and definitive about what's being offered within the organization and not to attract the 80% of millennials that they think might fit or the 80% of males or females or Caucasians or otherwise. It's about really attracting that 5% of people that would enjoy the experience that the organization is providing.
And have you found in the work that you do as a consultant when you talk to a company that productivity does increase after they implement a lot of the recommendations you make?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, if you're able to have better relationships being built, stronger communication streams, and ultimately more productive work environment because people are aligned based on values instead of just on age or sex or experience, then I think that we've got an aligned workplace that is all sharing the same mission, similar desires, and ultimately their wants as well.
Well, what's an ideal workplace for you in terms of where they've taken the things that you talk about in Rethink Work and implemented them, and it does work, that you're seeing less tension, and you're seeing different generations get along with one another, and you see productivity go up and profitability at the end of the day?
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly a few examples, and what I like to stress is that in the work that I'm doing, we're not looking at flipping an organization on its head. We're not doing anything significantly radical to the point that it's hugely disruptive. What we're looking at doing, and we've created, you know, I'm a co-founder of Now Innovations. We're going live here in about 2 weeks, but we've created an assessment that really looks to quantify some of that trust and some of the responsibilities and team management and commitment to the teams so that we can look to understand who would be a better fit within that organization. Now, again, if you can be working with friends, I'll say lightly, or just people that you enjoy working with and spending time with, then it obviously is conducive to a better work environment.
Yeah, and but it's hard, though, for an employer to get people to get along, let alone be friends, though, right?
Well, it is, but again, you have to recognize that the interest or the desire to change has to come from the top, and the implementation and the decision as to what that change looks like has to be top-down and bottom-up. And it has to be bought in from the organization. And truthfully, that's why larger, bigger organizations are having a difficult time, generally speaking, with change management, because there are so many more people to get on board than this is to say, like a tech startup in Vancouver, where they can create culture instead of recreate culture.
Yeah, I guess we're so used to, and employers especially, for the top-down stuff, that consulting with the people at the front line, I mean, that doesn't even happen at all.
Right. Right, and that's the state. And truthfully, and that's where the business opportunity came for Now Innovations, is that, you know, when we can anonymously from a third party understand the wants, needs, expectations of employees and be able to recommend some small tweaks and changes to an organization so that everyone can be happy, then great. And I mean, it's not about an engagement survey, because an engagement survey, you know, quite often will get done and then sit on a shelf and collect dust for 12 months until they do it again next year, hopefully hoping that they can be on the most engaged companies list or something like that. You know, with what we're doing, it's about action. And it's about empowering people to create a better environment for themselves.
Yeah. Is there an advice that you give to millennials, say? I mean, as I said earlier, you know, it's easy to pick on them and call them out. Is there something that could be improved, say?
Yeah, there's a couple things. Number one is nothing trumps work ethic and focus. I mean, there's a lot of people trying to do a lot of things at once and trying to, you know, get that, like, hustle mentality, which is, you know, a word that I'm not overly a big fan of at all. But I think really dedicating some time to understanding where that fit is going to be, what environment works well for you, and ultimately who you want to work with is great. The second thing is to understand that very often if you graduate from post-secondary school, you've gone to school for 832 weeks, and then we typically spend 2 to 4, maybe 6 or 8 weeks trying to find a job that we're hoping to be happy with for the rest of our career.
Yeah.
And so if we can take a little bit more time and ask a little bit harder questions, then, you know, finding that fit is imperative. And truthfully, from the organization's standpoint or the employee's standpoint or potential employee's standpoint, rushing this process doesn't do anyone any favors, because it's not good for the individual or the organization if someone's there for 6-8 weeks or even 6-8 months and realize that it's not a good fit for them.
I guess, did you write this book thinking that millennials themselves, younger people, would get something out of this book?
Certainly. Really, anyone who's looking to find that fit, to find that happy, regardless of their generation or their career stage either. I mean, it's for the individual who's trying to bring on that best fit. It's for the individual who's trying to find happy through the work that they're doing and ultimately find something that they can feel fulfillment from.
I never bring up people's ages, but I guess I'd have to in your case. I mean, because I've seen it written up in the paper and the sort. But, I mean, you're 24, is that correct?
I just turned 25.
Turned 25, yeah. So, I mean, you must get a lot of questions asking, well, what do you know about all of this stuff being your age? I mean, does that get annoying after a while?
Certainly. Yeah, it was annoying the first time, too.
Yeah.
And truthfully, I mean, I understand where people are coming from. But at the same time, I'm not talking about work and my experience in work and things that people can do at work. I'm talking about the idea of work. I'm talking about rethinking work altogether. And from the peers, the associates, the mentors, the business and community leaders that I've worked and seen and talked with, pair that with tenure that's shrinking, with anxiety and job dissatisfaction increasing, there needs to be a conversation to be had about rethinking this whole work thing in general. Because if we can remove the negative connotation with work, if we can rehumanize the work experience, then it's not about the job itself. It's about the entire experience that all of us can get a little bit more out of.
And then you find in the work that you do, you enjoy that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if I were to look at some of my core values, it would be constant learning, having a variety of responsibilities and things that I have to take care of in a day. It's the ability to travel and to discover and to be challenged and to drive my own agenda. I mean, I'm probably a very typical entrepreneur, and by no means am I advocating for entrepreneurship in the book. By no means am I advocating for a 9-to-5. I'm advocating for a redefinition of what it means to be successful on our own terms, and then to be able to go out, get that, and live a happier life through the work that we're doing.
And so, I mean, are you one of these people that makes plans and sees down the road 5, 10, 15, a career down the line, say?
I mean, I've certainly got goals. I keep them as high level and as vague. I keep them more as guidelines, like adaptive guidelines, because, you know, a conversation that you and I could have, Joe, you know, you could enlighten me on something that I'd never heard ever thought of before that might completely change the path that I'm on, and I like to make sure that I'm open and responsive to that. With that being said, at the same time, I'm still working towards, you know, being the person that I'm looking to become, and making sure that I'm not limited by the job that I'm doing, but more influenced by the experience that I've got.
I guess after reading this book and reading up on you in preparing for a chat today, the thing that I've been wondering is do you see yourself doing this for until 65, say?
I mean, I love every day of it. I like the entrepreneurial journey. There's nothing I enjoy more than jumping on a stage and speaking to a few hundred or a couple thousand people at a time, and to be able to challenge what we thought has been right for so long and provide an alternate perspective and opinion that ultimately lets people come to their own conclusion. So the short answer is yes, and I couldn't really be happier doing it.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure speaking to you today. It's an engaging and very thoughtful book, a useful one as well. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks a lot, Joe. I really appreciate it.
The book is called Rethink Work, Finding and Keeping the Right Talent. It's published by Barlow Books. Its author, Eric Termunde, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.